Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Welcome to the Julian Story Aviation Podcast.
Hello and welcome to episode 2 of the Julian Story Aviation Podcast. In this edition, we'll be discussing the effect that the COVID-19 pandemic is having on aviation worldwide, and we have a very special guest who explains to us what's involved in becoming a licensed aircraft engineer.
You can download this podcast from Apple Podcast, Amazon Alexa, SoundCloud, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, and all the normal places that you would download your podcast from. To keep up to date with the latest aviation news and to follow our adventures, you can follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Also, don't forget to check out our website, www.julianstory.co.uk.
The coronavirus pandemic continues to wreak havoc on the aviation industry worldwide. The 4 business aircraft that we manage remain grounded, and there's no sign of that situation changing anytime soon. But some essential flights are continuing despite the challenges. One of the best companies in the business when it comes to helping operators negotiate these kind of challenges is Universal Aviation, based in Houston, Texas. Robert Moyer and Christine Van Vakkus from Universal join me now. Rob and Christine, hi, how are you doing?
Good, how are you?
Very good.
I'm doing great. Thanks so much for having us.
Apart from the lockdown, we're doing okay. None of us have got coronavirus, so I think we're sort of winning. So here in Europe, there's very little going on aviation-wide. Is it the same in the rest of the world?
I'll jump in here. I would say for the most part, you see that flights are trickling to nil. There are very few flights that are taking place, and the flights that are taking place are surrounded primarily by humanitarian and repatriation flights.
Yeah, okay. So that was my next question. What kind of flights are still taking place? I mean, the normal sort of biz jet flights that we operate, all of that stopped, all of that's grounded. So I'm guessing that most of the flights that are happening, there's a special reason for them happening.
That is correct. You're seeing a lot of operators are wanting to fly or needing to fly. But right now, with all the restrictions around the world, a lot of the exceptions that we're seeing are for those humanitarian flights, repatriation flights, as well as any kind of air ambulance type operations. Other than that, we're seeing most operators just grounded across the globe.
Sure. And I know the situation, it was changing really fast. I mean, we had a trip last month around Africa. We've got an aircraft stranded in South Africa at the moment. And the situation was changing so quickly that it was hard to keep track of what countries were closing their borders. We were in Victoria Falls in Zimbabwe. And the plan had been to fly onto Zanzibar, but it became apparent that just wasn't going to be possible. So we cut the trip short. We flew back to South Africa. We had a whole load of issues when we got back to South Africa. But it's impossible, really, to just keep on top of everything, the speed, everything's changing. Are you finding that as well?
Well, initially we were finding that when a lot of this, so this has been going on already in the Far East, especially in the China, Hong Kong area.
Yep.
But when it really hit the quote-unquote Western world was about around about the 10th or 9th or 10th of March.
Yep.
And between then and now, we've seen more than 1,000 either new NOTAMs, new updates, or a variation of the two, 1,000 NOTAMs and 1,000 restrictions. Between, you know, the few hundred countries of the world, and it was like a tidal wave, but it took a very big global team effort from our side to keep up with that information, to really read, understand, and digest that information, and put it on a platform for not just our customer base, but the aviation world to use as a resource. So hopefully we're able to enlighten some flight departments out there to what the major restrictions currently are.
Absolutely. And also to build on what Robert said, in addition to having these NOTAMs, some locations were changing, it felt like, hourly. And then when these restrictions were being issued, they weren't sophisticated enough. They were just blanket restrictions. So what Robert was speaking to as far as digesting them was not only viewing these, but also looking into it further and determining how that is applicable to general aviation. Is it no general aviation flights? Is it only permitted for repatriation? If so, are they permitting the crew to rest at the destination? So we had to really, and we continue to do so, take a deep dive into any and every restriction that we're seeing to harvest what we need for the general aviation platform.
Yeah, absolutely. So what sort of challenges are crews facing at the moment? Obviously, there are borders closing, but what other challenges are they facing?
I think the primary thing is not only border closing as far as crew are concerned, but you're looking at visa restrictions.
Yep.
A lot of countries did either permit visas on arrival, which were removed as a possibility, or they informed persons that had visas that they were no longer valid and would have to try to reobtain one.
Yep.
And then the other part is the rest. Because you have those limitations, countries were either not permitting it at all or permitting you to come in and be self-quarantined for a particular time or telling you that your only option is to sleep on the plane or drop and go. So those were the huge issues and still are the hurdles that crew are facing currently.
Yeah, I know that. I know that feeling particularly well. Last month, we spent 3 days sleeping on a Citation at Lanseria Airport in South Africa. You guys got us a landing permit to go back to South Africa. It came through from the South African Department of Transport. But shortly before we took off, and they hadn't told anybody about this, they introduced a new restriction requiring that British citizens and a whole list of citizens from a whole other list of countries needed to have a visa, whereas previously they hadn't needed to. So by the time we got to South Africa, you needed to have a visa if you had a UK passport. So we arrived with a landing permit, were denied entry to the country, and the only option that the immigration guys could give us was that we had to go back and stay in the aircraft. Now, by this point, loads of other countries in Africa had closed their borders, and there was nowhere we could fly to, or no safe country we could fly to within the range of a Citation that hadn't already closed its borders. So we spent 3 days sleeping in an aircraft on the ramp at Lanseria. So I'm very familiar with that.
Oh, it puts a lot of stress on the crew. It's both with not knowing what's going to go on and, you know, being able to get your crew rest in order to be able to depart and head back to where your base is.
Absolutely. And as our saga continued, it was becoming less and less feasible that I could fly anywhere else, even if the border of any other country had been open, because you can't sleep properly in a Citation with two passengers. That doesn't even come close to being crew rest. In the end, we ended up leaving the aircraft in South Africa. It's still there. I have to go back and get it when all this craziness is finished, and we got airline flights back to London. But yeah, we were in the aircraft for 3 days whilst this chaos was resolved, and it was, you know, it was very much a situation of events or regulations changing faster than anybody could keep up with them. So yeah, I'm familiar with that challenge.
Absolutely. Some of the other challenges, and it's good that you mentioned that. Some of the other challenges that our crew being faced with is the lack of crew rest. Say the industry pulls off a miracle and gets your flight approved from point A to point B to point C.
Yep.
However, the point B is your normally a tech stop and a crew change.
Yep.
You're no longer able to stay and have an overnight sleep because you'll have to be in quarantine for 14 days.
Of course.
So you'll have to do a quick turn.
Yeah.
But in order to do that quick turn, that technical refueling stop, and get a new crew on board, there's no way to get the crew in on commercial flights. A lot of countries don't have commercial flights departing the country.
Yep.
So a lot of operators are trying to take advantage of this time to, you know, get some of their maintenance out of the way. But when they deliver their aircraft to a particular country, there's no commercial flights to get back home.
Of course.
So a lot of unique challenges that are there to be had.
How are operators overcoming that? Are they staying there with the aircraft somehow, or what are they tending to do?
Just keep working with the authorities. And we found that the authorities are reviewing everything on a case-by-case basis. If there are restrictions in place that don't allow you to stay, or they allow you to stay, you'll have to be quarantined for 14 days. And some countries are designating certain hotels to be essentially an approved quarantine location. So that's one option. Okay. Another option is just put it aside and wait for the commercial airlines to open back up. You have to keep up with what's going on in the different countries, or just have a good service provider that you can lean on for the information. And a lot of that information we're seeing hopefully should either start easing up towards the end of this month, but that's wishful thinking maybe.
Yeah.
But a lot of these countries have the 30th of April as the next time that either updates, stronger restrictions, or the end of the restrictions are to be had on the 30th of April, but we'll see how that goes.
Okay. So how are you helping some of these operators overcome the challenges that they're facing? Is there anything that you're doing differently that you wouldn't be normally doing, for example?
We're just taking it one case at a time, presenting it to the proper authorities, and just asking for them to provide an exception on your behalf.
Are you finding that the authorities are reasonably sympathetic? In South Africa, when we had our situation, I found that they were not in any way sympathetic. The fact that the government had caused the problem didn't seem to go any way to helping them want to resolve it. But are you finding that in most cases, the authorities are sympathetic and trying to help, or not so much?
I think so. And I think maybe in your situation, because it was so fluid, I'm sure the government entities that were enforcing those rules, or I think they're just trying to digest them and really understand what it was all about, what leeway they had. And instead of making the wrong decision, they just had to enforce it for face value.
Absolutely. Yep.
Now that dust is kind of settled, I believe now they're settling in. They understand the restrictions. They understand the flexibility they have when it comes to our unique industry, which is general aviation. And as long as we're meeting all their protocols, showing that we're willing to do whatever it is we need to do to be legal, quote unquote, we're finding that there's more empathy out there. But but they have to get past the that initial stage of trying to really understand what their flexibility is.
Yeah, is there any flexibility, or the rules tend to be enforced in a sort of hard and fast way?
A lot of the hard and fast rules out there right now is really adhering to those quarantine, really adhering to keeping a solid, at least a 14-day travel history.
Yep.
Where have you been in the previous 14 days before entering my country or before transiting my particular country? That's a good protocol for anybody to keep right now. Where have you been over the past 14 days?
Okay.
That seems to be the key, one of the big key indicators. And just staying on top of the information that's out there. Should you be planning trips for May? We'd love to.
Yep.
But probably on the 1st of May, a lot of the rules are going to change.
Yep.
And maybe the 15th of May, a lot of the rules are going to change. Mm-hmm. Be flexible, be fluid with your schedules. Keep everybody educated, to include your passengers, and we'll figure out how to navigate these waters.
Absolutely. What additional precautions, if any, do you think crew are taking to keep themselves and their passengers safe at the moment? Are you aware of anything being done differently?
I think the major thing that we're seeing is crew trying to ensure that they have the protective equipment on board the aircraft, the PPE that we refer to.
Yep.
The issue that some operators are finding is access to that, because, of course, there's shortages worldwide, but what we've informed them is to ensure that they ensure that the flight, or the aircraft, I'm sorry, is processed, as far as cleaning, based on the SOP for the from the OEM. So they're wanting to make sure that they follow those procedures. Outside of that, I haven't heard of any other specific restrictions that they're, or specific, any additional items that they're doing to protect themselves.
Okay. Are there any requirements in terms of additional aircraft sanitization before landing, or not?
Not at this time. Based on what had transpired during the times of Zika, there were, but in this case, they're not. Some countries originally, I think Hong Kong was one of them, So they were requiring that when the crew get off, that they wear protective equipment while they're on the ground. Other countries have just resorted in letting you know that you can do a tech stop through there, but the crew are and passengers are not allowed to get off the aircraft. But there haven't been any specific processes implemented by any country.
Okay, very good.
We're seeing a big shift right now. Of course, a lot of the GA aircraft are grounded.
Yeah.
But we're seeing a big shift to a lot of cargo flights. There are a lot of humanitarians across the globe wanting to shift their focus on helping their local communities. Okay. With PPE, which we know a lot of that PPE is located in China.
Yeah.
Just a lot of the world supplies are in China. So we're seeing a big push from businesses all across the globe trying to use their resources to secure, pick up, and deliver PPE back to their home countries. Now it's shifting GA perspective to a cargo conversation. Okay. And that's a lot of the flights that you'll see today are a lot of the cargo flights. As Christine mentioned earlier, the repatriation flights are still happening, but not as hot and heavy as they were last month. This alarm was sounded last month, get your people home, whether it's employees, remote workers, family members, or variation of the two. But we're still seeing some of those repatriation flights trickle in as well as we go into more of a deeper shutdown. You see oil prices are now in the negative. So
unheard
some
of,
oil companies
it?
Are having pulled. It's unheard of. It's crazy. So, but we as an industry, we're pretty resilient, and we'll stay on top of all the latest requirements and restrictions out there. And we know our industry's eager to fly. I'm sure you're eager to go retrieve your aircraft. But as soon as we're given the green light, I'm sure we'll ease into the waters and get this engine going again.
The other thing I was going to say is that we do have operators that are ready and they're waiting for when restrictions are starting to ease to be able to operate again. So it's just waiting for that moment where you see certain countries starting to provide those eases and restrictions, and then they're ready to take off for business.
As we all are. Robert, Christine, thank you so much for your time. That's brilliant. We'll speak to you again soon.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much indeed. Thank you.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, "What the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass!" So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
The guys at Universal really do a great job. We've used them for years and they've supported us on some really complex trips that probably wouldn't have gone anywhere near as smoothly without them. If you need to get airborne during the remainder of the pandemic or at any other time, I can't recommend them highly enough. If you're listening to this podcast in Europe, you can contact their European Operations Centre based at London Stansted Airport by dropping them an email to eoc@univ-wea.com. That's eoc@univ-wea.com, or by calling them on +44 1279 680 566. That's +44 1279 680 566.
If you need an aircraft delivered, Julian Story Aviation is your number one choice. Specializing in King Airs, CJs, Citations, and the Learjet 40 and 45, we can help you with everything from factory acceptance or arranging a pre-buy inspection through to guidance on importation, tax implications, and ownership structures, as well as fairing your new aircraft. We have delivered dozens of aircraft worldwide, safely, on time, and on budget, and we would love to help you with yours. If you're buying or selling an aircraft, email fairing@julianstory.co.uk or call us on +44 1624 829 436.
For anyone who has any connection at all with Biggin-Hell Airport, my next very special guest needs no introduction. He is the son of the legendary Singh, but he's also the co-founder and executive director of the British School of Aviation. He is Shonu Singh. Shonu, thank you for doing this, sir. How are you?
Very well, thank you, Julian. Good to talk to you.
Very good. Are you avoiding the coronavirus?
Yes, keeping safe, missing aviation very much so.
Yeah, same
it's
for all of us.
Always been in my blood, and we're back at the airport.
Absolutely right. So with aviation being in your blood, anyone who knows Biggin-Hell will know your father. I met him, I think, 25 years ago. So is it a stupid question to say, how did you get involved in aviation?
Absolutely not. No, it's a great question. And I was fortunate enough to be born into aviation with my father setting up Falcon Flying Services in the late 70s at Biggin-Hell Airport. It was a very different airport then.
I remember.
Not as corporate as it is now. Yeah, you probably do.
As a young boy, I used to ride up there on my bicycle, look through the railings at all the PA-28s and Cessna 172s, and I used to think to myself, one day I'm going to learn to fly one of those. And I remember, I mean, it was a very different place. I mean, you could get into the terminal building, you could buy a cup of tea and make it last all day, you could watch the aeroplanes. And back then, it was much more of a mix of aircraft. There's a lot of light aircraft, whereas now it's mainly biz jets. And I know that's the way of the world. But yeah, it's a very different, for better or for worse, it's a very different airport to the way it was even 20 years ago.
Yeah, that's right. And currently now, on the GA side of things, there's US Falcon Flying Services and another one or two companies on a smaller scale. The flight training wise, we're the biggest and the oldest at Biggin-Hell now.
Yeah.
And have been for some time. That's through EFG Flying School that my brother Anoop, he runs all the flight training side of things. So that's been doing very well. It's just it's a shame we're in this current climate and we've had to just pause on things for a minute, but we're keen to start up again.
Absolutely right. Yeah, I mean, it is as if somebody has pressed the pause button on aviation at the moment, but it can't last forever, and there's got to be a light at the end of the tunnel somewhere. But so I mean, it was pretty much innovative.
Oh, it's so surprising, Julian, the amount of people that are saying, oh, you know, they can't wait to start flying again.
Yeah,
it's really great feedback.
Yeah, well, me as well. I mean, I do it for a living, but I haven't flown since 18th of March. That's the longest in 23 years that I've not been flying. And it just feels very odd not to be able to go fly when you want to. We just sort of take it for granted. And, you know, this sort of thing comes along and everything, you know, it's a whole different world, isn't it? But going back to you, I mean, it's pretty much inevitable, wasn't it, that you were going to be involved in aviation in some way or other. Did your father encourage you to, or is it just something you just wanted to do because you saw him do it? How did that work?
I think it kind of happened by default. I remember when I was about 5, 6 years old, my dad used to take me up to the airport during my holidays and sometimes after school, and just got me into the hangar, and I used to help the boys. They used to get me to do all the dirty jobs like cleaning and the boring mundane jobs like unscrewing the panels and things like that. But, you know, at that sort of age, 6 up to 10 years old, you know, you're like, wow, this is amazing. I'm working on an aircraft, and there's nothing I wanted more than that.
Yeah, you go to school and speak to your friends. No one else will have spent the weekend fixing an airplane, will they? That's not going to happen.
No, absolutely not. And then when you're then told that, oh, there's a test flight happening or a check flight, do you want to come along? And, you know, that buzz is so amazing, and I still remember it now. Yeah. You know, that moment never goes. Very special.
Absolutely right. So you went from helping at your dad's workshop when you're a little boy. How did that progress to becoming a career? Which direction did you go in? I don't even know how you become an aircraft engineer. I know a lot about becoming a pilot because I've been there and done it, but I know nothing about becoming an engineer. It's like a sort of a mystery to me. You guys are just people we take the aircraft to when it breaks. How did you go from helping your dad's workshop to it being a career?
Yeah, so I remember quite clearly, actually. I was I'd finished school and A-levels and higher education, and I made an application to a college in Bristol, which was Brunel College back then.
Okay.
And I applied to become an aircraft engineer under the old BCAR system, it was called.
Okay.
It's moved on from there now. And I got accepted to do my qualifications with them. And it was a 2.5-year course, I remember, full-time, where I sat a series of classes, and at the end I would sit for my module exams, which were 17 different exams. Quite tough, I have to say, but the teaching was good. So that really did help. And I'd managed to pass those exams, and at that time, you used to do an oral exam with the Civil Aviation Authority.
Okay.
And I'd passed that, and I was issued a license soon after. And I was fortunate enough because I had the practical experience behind my belt.
Right, yeah, of course.
Things are quite different now, which I can explain to you as well.
Okay.
Nowadays, it's called the Part 66 license.
Okay.
Which is recognized all over the world, but it is actually a European based license.
Okay.
So all the member states have their own licenses, and you can either go to a college, or you can self-study, or you could go to places like British School of Aviation that I'm part of.
Okay, let's talk a little bit about that. How did that come about?
Yeah, sure. Well, British School of Aviation came about by chance, actually, when the sad demise of Monarch Airlines happened back in 2018.
Yeah.
We were given the chance by the administrators to take over their Part 147 school, which is where you can carry out your Civil Aviation Authority type ratings and basic exams.
Okay.
Now, Monarch was at the forefront of this. We've continued that, and we're very fortunate, along with my three other partners, to carry out our first typing exams for the Boeing 787 earlier in November this year.
Okay.
Last year. And we've had some major airlines on those courses, which we're very proud of.
Brilliant.
I won't name drop just yet.
Yeah.
And we're soon to be approved for the Boeing 737 NG and MAX as well.
Very good. So do you, is it only the type specific courses you do at the British School of Aviation, or do you take a young person who wants to be an aircraft engineer and train them to be an engineer? Do you do the whole thing, or is it just the type specific courses?
No, so at the moment we were concentrating on the type specific courses.
Okay.
But coming from industry and talking to the CA as well, have been very supportive. We've realised that there is a distinct need of more licensed engineers in industry.
Yeah.
Now, we've focused on that, and we are now offering the B1 and B2 basic courses,
okay.
Albeit through a short course.
Okay.
Now, the B1 is mainly the mechanical engineering side of things.
Okay.
And the B2... there's a big rivalry between the B1s and the B2s.
I'm aware of this.
The B2s focus more on the avionics side of things.
Yeah. Okay. Okay.
But slowly, engineers are going for both licenses at the same time for the B1 and B2
combined.
Is that right?
Okay. So yeah. If I was a young man or a young woman and I was fairly practical and I thought to myself that becoming an aircraft engineer would be a good career, how would I start? What exams would be good for them to take at school? Are there subjects that are good for them to concentrate on, or does it not matter? And what are the requirements to get onto these courses?
Yes, so at school, the standard maths, English, and probably a science such as physics always tends to help.
Okay.
At GCSE level.
Yeah.
You do need 5 GCSEs. I know the grading has changed now, but it used to be a grade C or above.
Yeah, I don't really understand.
It's numbers
rather than
now.
Letters, isn't it? Yeah, yeah, okay. So for us older people, it's the equivalent to a sort of an A to C.
Yes, that's right. Although there are exemptions as well.
Okay.
The CA are quite practical about this. If you can study for the exams and pass them, then you're more than capable of completing the course.
Probably a little bit like the flying exams. I mean, there's no academic requirement officially to take the ATPL exams. But if you don't understand any math or any physics, you ain't going to do it. It's probably the same deal, isn't it?
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's more on competence.
So they get some reasonable GCSEs that will help them understand what they're going to do. What would be the next step?
So the next step would be either to sign up with a college on a full-time course.
Yeah.
Now, the full-time courses are about 2.5 years.
Okay.
Or you can either do it as a self-study course where you sit at home and you buy the books online. You can buy them through BSA, British School of Aviation.
Okay.
There are other companies out there.
Okay.
And you can either sit them with a company like BSA or go to the CAA and sit the exam modules there.
Okay. And those exams, what do those exams give you? They're part of what you need to get your engineering license. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay.
So you'll be sitting various, depending on what route you want to go down, B1, B2, all combined. You'll be sitting maths, physics, air legislation, human factors, various topics like these, aerodynamics. And I tell you what, I know you're learning to achieve this license, but what you actually gain from it is amazing. And the thought process that goes into it, it's a life skill that you end up achieving.
Absolutely. So once you've passed your exams, and of course there'll be a practical element either with an employer or at college, what's the next step? You can presumably then start to try and get yourself a job as a licensed engineer, is that right?
Yes, that's correct. So demand is high,
yep.
Which is a great thing.
Yeah.
So you could either start by, in fact, if we rewind a little bit, at the start of your career, if you sign up as an apprentice with a maintenance organisation, through general aviation or through an airline, they will sign you up with a registered facility, which is, again, sorry to mention BSA again, but...
No, go for it.
BSA is now offering, will be starting up the apprenticeship scheme very soon. So you could sign up with an airline and then they will send you to someone like us where you will carry out your apprenticeship and carry out your modules. So from the start, you start off with an A license
Okay.
Category course, And that will give you the basics.
What is that?
The B1 and B2.
Okay, so I didn't know about that. What's an A license?
So an A license engineer will be given basic responsibilities within a company.
Okay.
Where they can do minor tasks like tire and wheel change, and the company themselves will have their own tasks set out that an A license engineer can do.
Okay.
But they can't certify any major rectification work on any aircraft or on any liner.
Okay, so it's sort of basic line maintenance that they would be able to do.
Correct. Yes.
Yeah.
And they are utilised by many of the airlines, such as TUI and EasyJet, Ryanair.
Yeah.
It's a great way to set off on your career.
Absolutely right. And to hold an A license, you still need to be clear, you still need to have done all the exams. But that's the first license you get, is it?
You don't do all the exams that the B1s and B2s do.
Okay.
There's, if anyone wants more information, I can always get information sent out. But you do less modules than you would the full licenses.
Okay. So when you first start setting out on the road to becoming an aircraft engineer, I know a lot of people work on the smaller aircraft like at the flying schools and the flying clubs. Other people go and work for EasyJet or Virgin or someone on a big aircraft. Is it the same license or is it a different license?
Well, the license is the same, but whether you choose to go down the piston engine route or the turbine route, that's where the difference is.
Right, okay.
You can stick the modules for both piston and gas turbine engines,
yeah,
which will give you privileges to work on both.
And do you
ultimately, you're studying the same, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, so do you decide that in the beginning, or can you change from one to the other during your career, and what would you have to do?
Generally, yeah, at the beginning of your career, of your course, you'd choose what route you want to go down. Yep. Many people do both because there's not much in it to do both.
Okay.
And you always have that fallback that if there is, if you do have an industry career change from piston engine to gas turbine or vice versa, you can then at least have a fallback on what you're going to do next, which is always good to have.
I think that covers everything. How would somebody get in touch with you if they were interested in setting off on this path?
Yeah, sure. So you could either go to our website at Falcon, which is simply falcon.aero, A-R-O. That's for the GA side of things. And for our Part 147 school, which is at Luton Airport, that's BSA, Bravo Sierra Alpha, .world, W-O-R-L-D. And just pop your details into the contact form there, and we'll definitely get back to you.
Brilliant. That's super. Shonu, thank you so much. Stay safe, avoid the coronavirus, and I hope we all get back to normal soon.
It's been a real pleasure, Julian, and we all admire all your trips around the world. You're doing fantastic, and can't wait to see them resumed on LinkedIn again.
Thank you, my friend. We'll speak to you very soon. Thanks for doing this, man.
Take care. Thanks a lot,
Shonu. Thank you.
All right. Thanks. Bye.
If you've enjoyed listening to this edition of the Julian Story Aviation podcast, then don't forget to subscribe so that you don't miss a single episode. If you have any comments about the podcast or have any great ideas for a podcast guest, drop me an email to podcast@julianstory.co.uk. Finally, stay safe in what are unquestionably the strangest of times, and if you're one of the lucky ones who's still managing to fly, fly safe and keep it shiny side up.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.